Holly, did you see that?
I didn't feel
he coaxed me.
Yeah.
Oh, I have one here. Thank you. All right, thank you, everyone. I'd like to call to order a joint special meeting of Ways and Means Committee and the Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee. You want to call Roe?
Archer?
Here.
Geraldine?
Yes.
Donaldson? Mayo? Maloney? Petit? Ronk? Eckert?
Here.
Collins? Haynes?
Here.
Heppner?
Here.
Thank you. And thank you, Holly, for joining us, Juan. We really appreciate it. Jerry Benjamin and James Garcia, who assisted with the report from the Benjamin Center. They're here to talk about this important subject. I think it's really timely that we're having this conversation, given the change in leadership that happened in the sheriff's office and the upcoming changes in the district attorney's office. Holly, thank you for all your service for all these years. We appreciate it. And the county court. So with, in addition to that, the sweeping criminal justice reforms by the state, there's a lot to talk about, and I think it's a timely time to have this conversation. This report was requested by Ways and Means Committee last year when we engaged the Benjamin Center to do our review of the county's budget. There were several areas that we wanted to look at and take a deep dive, and urgent was one of them, and so this is the product of that request. I'd like to ask Dr. Benjamin to kind of give us a brief overview, and then we'll get into questions and a meaningful dialogue. But one of the first things I'd like to do is just set some ground rules. This is, we think it's an important subject, and we just ask for respectful communication with everyone, ask them to focus on debating an issue or a topic and not discussing people. We're requesting the rights of others to be heard even with differences of opinion, and ask that people are committed to listening without interrupting, holding no sidebar conversations or competing conversations while a member is speaking. So with that, Dr. Benjamin, if you'll give us a brief overview.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me here today. I'm having a kind of nostalgia trip in this room and on this floor. I'm with James Garcia, who is my undergraduate assistant last year and has now graduated from college and in the job market. Should anybody be hiring? And he made an important contribution to this report, so I invited him to come to this meeting. Okay, so I'm going to try to speak for 5 to 7 minutes about this report so as to not take up time for discussion.
You can do that?
I can do it in one sentence. Okay, so I presume familiarity with the Urgent Program. It's an intergovernmental task force created in accord with best practices as endorsed by the United States government for combating drugs, guns, and gangs. Its mission was extended to combating guns from the initial mission. As we outline here, the program was established, I think, in 07. Page 1 is missing from this draft. So I'm not hold on only to specific dates, but it was...
You're right, 07.
It was funded initially from local sources, not from federal sources, as some people believe, and it was created to have the county government be more efficacious in this very important mission. It was a flawed organization from the outset, and we go into why we think the organizational structure was flawed. Multi-headed programs are not a good idea, from my point of view and from what most analysts of organizations think. And it was a multi-headed program. It was underfunded. It had the usual, or I won't say the usual tensions, but the tensions that commonly occur among police departments, unfortunate as that may be, will manifest a little bit in this organization on its outset. all the members, all the potential members did not join. Some dropped out. There were expectations that the program would pay for itself. As the said, it did not pay for itself from forfeitures and grant sources. We had some experience of corruption, which was delegitimizing of the program by a member of Kingston Police Department. So, and yet the professionals in law enforcement in the county strongly believe in the value and importance of this task force. When we looked at it, we saw a lot of data reported on achievements, drugs, quantity of drugs confiscated, automobiles taken, cash taken, and so on. But we couldn't systematically assess, we didn't feel we could systematically assess the relative success of the program. We also reported on the in and out kind of characteristic of member departments, the member departments not meeting their commitments for staffing or the expectations of staffing, the predisposition of police chiefs to be in favor of this activity and this collaboration, but having to sell it to the heads of town governments who weren't sure they wanted their police officers working outside their jurisdictions, weren't sure of the benefit they were getting, and they certainly were focused on the cost. The advocates of the program and the people leading it believe that there's too much emphasis on cost and not enough on achievement, but the systematic comparative study of achievement and well-established metrics on that from an analytic point of view, we weren't to find compelling metrics. And it's very important when organizations are set up or as they proceed to evolve that the metrics be established and agreed by the people who are doing the work so that we can, the people who are paying the bills and the people who are doing the work can come to agreement about how the assessment will occur. And that was absent here. There are evident reforms in the restructuring. There are three stages of reform of this program. Most recent one is contemporary. In the restructuring of the program and the attempt to get greater participation from potential participating entities in leadership. There's a disagreement in the room on the leadership, whether the leadership should be in the DA's office or should be with the sheriff. I interviewed people from both those organizations on more than one occasion and trying to assess this. The sheriff gave me evidence after I finished the paper of sheriff-headed programs. We had researched this, but we had a comprehensive list from, I think, the Sheriff's Association, if that's right. So I would say that about half the programs are headed by district attorney's offices in counties that have them in New York, and about task forces in New York, and about half are headed by the sheriff's offices. So the funding for the program is located now in the sheriff's budget. Head of the program is the DA, I think it's fair to say, or the office bar, and this remains an issue of some contention. The cost-benefit, I also discussed, we also discussed as an issue, the in-and-out character of the participating governments, an issue, the forfeiture practices in the courts in Ulster County, and the consequent view that revenues that could be captured are not captured is a result of that. Is that issue, I would say. There's also some, I think, the strengthening of the officer selection process and accountability process among officers reflected in the recent reforms. As a result of this study, which I said I summarized, and now I have somebody who remembers what I said briefly. As a result of my study, I said that we should have an urgent program. It might be reasonably asked why I said that, having not been able to say that, not been able to say how it affects this. I think that the testimony of the professionals was important to me, and I think that if we're skeptical about the urgent program, this is my adding to the report in a way. If we're skeptical, we should give it a chance to perform relative to agreed measures once they're established. Not undo the program, but talk to the people who are delivering it, and about a period where they'll act within the framework of expectations that they've agreed to. But I don't think that abolishing it is a... I didn't come away thinking that that was a good idea, whether or not, however it's headed and restructured to in accordance with the report. I ended up with 13, an unfortunate number. It's not a particularly lucky number, but guys like me get bar mitzvahed when they're 13, so that's... I think that 13 recommendations, very briefly... I recommend that the county should recommit to the urgent program by resolution, that the district attorney should formally take charge, that the committee, that the governance committee, which really hasn't documented its work and hasn't acted in accord with the MOUs, become advisory, but for oversight and collaboration with the DA, Sheriff Department retain the budget in its. This is a compromise position. Retain the budget in its accounts. That federal aid be more aggressively sought for the program. I think other jurisdictions have done better at getting federal aid, and I suggest that that's possible. I really believe that there should be a comprehensive budget, and I think that this is a shortcoming of all interdepartmental programs in the county government, and it's a shortcoming of intergovernmental programs. By that I mean, even though the resources are coming from a lot of different places, they should be located in one place so the person who is looking at the program or running it knows what they are, and they should be resources that are committed. So whether it's federal sourced or state sourced or county sourced or town sourced, there should be a budget that is comprehensive and that can be used to measure the resources committed against the benefits. And that is not the practice in this county for programs of this type. It's not a unique circumstance of this program. I think that the resources gathered as a result of enforcement should be segregated and used to support the program. I don't think that's a great matter of great controversy. Priority should be used to cover costs of participating governments. But I think in a default situation, the participating government should not be required to pay the operating costs of the program. I think the operating costs for overtime and related expenses, if they can't be met from the revenues gathered by the program's operation, should be paid for by the county. The governments aren't committing as they should. And I think some of the in-kind costs can be covered by them, but if we're going to pay for overtime and we're going to have approval of overtime at the county level, then the overtime needs to be a county charge. That's my judgment. Metrics should be adopted against which the program will perform. This is a mantra for me. If you come into my bedroom while I'm sleeping and you poke me in the ribs, I'll say metrics should be adopted. You know, so this is a professional position of analysts. That people should be working toward defined goals, and their performance should be measurable. Not that everything's measurable, it should be significant elements of measurability, but there's no accountability. And then we can assess performance against costs. And for people who are skeptical, and there should be annual reporting in accord with those metrics. For the program, not just a subunit of the sheriff's department or a subunit of the DA's department, but a program report annually or in some repeated cycle. So that's what we came up with. I skipped a lot of the detail. I'm happy to answer questions or at least get answers if I haven't got them.
Well, I thought what we could do at this juncture, thank you so much for that overview. It pretty much captured everything. But there is a lot at the beginning of this report that really context sets some of the history, what's transpired over the years. And so I'll leave it to the group here how you want to go through. Do you want to go through the questions? Do you want to go to the end and get to the 13 points? But I do think there's some value and having some understanding, particularly since we have the folks here that are running it day in and day out and are accountable for it, to really understand some of the dynamics they're grappling with and the challenges they've had with regards to measuring performance and the value add. So I'll leave it to members. Rich?
What Jerry basically said, thank you very much, but I would like to know why Juan and Holly, would like to say, should stay in the DA's department, should stay in the sheriff's department. I mean, you felt strongly that it should maybe come to the sheriff's department, and there again, if you can answer why it would be in the DA, and Holly, if you can ask what, answer the question, why it should stay in the DA's department. So, whoever first, I don't choose.
As a newly elected sheriff, 10 months in office, if I may, I'd like to, I think the best way to do that is to discuss the report. Doctor had 10 minutes. I think I should talk about the report for 10 minutes, and I believe the DA should talk about the report for 10 minutes. That would be fair.
If that's how you both would like to approach it, we're open to that.
So, as you know, I just took over in January as a retired New York State Police investigator. I can say with some authority that for the last over two decades, I was in special details and narcotics task forces. So, I know the game. I've been around it for quite some time, and I have a lot of experience with it. Not to say no one else here has that experience, but when you work in New York City for that many years, working on details like that, one thing I will tell you is that you're always going to have, Class A personalities or Type A personalities, because that's the type of job that it is. And you're always going to have a difference of opinions when you have a task force. It comes with the territory. And I'm just going to go over a few things in the report. Number one, our geographic location here in Ulster County makes it difficult to get folks from other parts of the state to come and work here. We are the northern part of the Southern District and the southern part of the Northern District. So it's difficult to get a task force, if you will. The majority of the task forces, whether it's a federal task force or a state task force, when they come in, they want to run them. They will not have a local entity run it. So if you have the federal government in it, like the DEA or the FBI, they want to run it. Or if you have the state police, they will run it. We're fortunate that we have a pretty good relationship with Homeland Security, and they embedded folks in our task force. But that's not always the case. So you always got to keep that in mind. When it comes to the doctor discussing the grants, he's right. I think we should be a little bit more aggressive on that. However, prior to 2016, this was not a Hyde County, and it became a Hyde County, and that's high intensity drug trafficking area county. After 2016, due to the work of the members of the sheriff's office, I also want to remind everyone that Urgent was started by the members of the sheriff's office. So prior to 2016, we were not HIDA, and it's difficult to get federal grants if you're not a HIDA recognized county. And that was late 2016, so we're only talking just a couple of years into it. But I do agree with the doctor that we need to look at getting grants. We do get some grants, and we discuss the monies that we do get from the three different grants. But we can do a better job in that. And again, there are prerequisites for grants. We're considered a 2A category, where there's over 100,000 folks. And I know that because I just submitted a grant with the help of the Benjamin Center for the opioid epidemic, which I don't think we're going to get because it's a Hail Mary pass in some of these cases when it comes to grant. I've got to keep that in mind as well. In regards to membership of Urgent, it's true, there hasn't been... And it has a lot to do with the expectations of a task force in Urgent. I wholeheartedly believe and agree that if you're going to run a task force, and that it has to be a definitive chain of command, which I believe is in place now, with an executive committee that oversees it. At the beginning, it wasn't like that. I would also like to state in regards to that, you have operational control and administrative control. if you have folks from other entities, like the Village of New Paltz or Alamo folks, or the Town of New Paltz, and the Village of Alamo, and they work for you, they are administratively assigned to their jobs, but operationally they're supposed to work for you. They're supposed to work for the operational commander, and in this case would be Mr. Weishaupt. I will tell you that when you don't pay overtime, you don't pay the bills, you don't really have control. So I agree that it should be a separate a budget that encompasses at least the overtime costs of those towns, because this way you have that control. To achieve, and that's also going to help to achieve, you know, a stable membership in the task force. One of the things that in the report was that some of the towns pulled out because they weren't indemnified, like the town of Ulster, and they, I think they pulled out in 2010. But that has since changed, and so everybody's now indemnified, and we sent a memorandum of agreement to the county attorney, and then it goes to all the town town boards, and the police chiefs go in front there, and they request that. As far as the what happened in the history of Urgent, I think although it's important to note that that is not the case now. There are things in place to stop that, and I think initially when the DA's office took over control of the of Urgent, what they did was they were supposed to bring other police departments back in into the fold, like the city of Kingston, the town of Ulster, the town of Lloyd. That did not occur. As a matter of fact, we just lost Woodstock a couple of weeks ago, and it's difficult because they're looking to pay. They want us to offset their pay with obviously these seizures, you know, asset forfeitures and seizures. And that wasn't always the case. The other issue at hand here too is we are already doing that in the county. If you look at the CAC, and it's the Children's Advocacy Center, there are two police agencies that the county is paying for their entire. They're paying $75,000 a piece. One is the Village of Ellenville, and one is Saugerties. By the way, the individual that was pulled from Saugerties is now in the CAC. And again, it just goes back to how you want to better control a task force. My argument about whether the DA or the sheriff runs it, you know, if you ask me the question, I'm gonna give you my answer, and that is that it's my people, it's my budget, and I should run it. And the initial changeover was to bring the other PDs and to bring and there is an internal difference between a seizure and a forfeiture. So you have seizures when you stop and you make the arrest and you make that seizure, and then the actual forfeiture. And in 2017, forfeitures was zero. 2018, forfeitures was zero. 2019, it's $8,000 this year. And so I'm just looking at what I see are the facts. And although I can tell you that we cannot do Urgent without the DA's office, it really is an important part of the task force. And I'm sure that the DA and the sheriff, whoever the future DA, is going to work those details out. But I also believe that there is a difference. There's a checks and balance of law enforcement that that I know very, very well. And that is that prosecutors prosecute, law enforcement enforces. And when you make that a foggy issue, it becomes a problem. There is a certain oversight that the district attorney's office has, and we cannot forget that. And I'm not opposed to having members of the district attorney's office in the task force as far as investigators, but as far as running it, I just think inherently it's just not good. Now, it's true in certain places around the state that the DA's office does run it. Those are big counties like Westchester County, New York City. It's not always the case in small counties, which was the request that I got from the Sheriff's Association, that half of the sheriffs run it. But a lot of them work with the DA's office because it's important. They're the ones who decide if we're going to prosecute the case or not. And of course, we can't work without him. And that's, in a nutshell, what I wanted to talk about. Again, I talked about the chain of command. I'm not going to get too much into the weeds here on some of this, on the details, but I think if given the chance, I can do a better job because I've been doing it my whole life, or over two decades. I don't think anybody in here can say that. And it's something that I've been doing for many, many years, everything from whether it's a drug task force or joint terrorism or auto theft or labor racketeering. And these are all task forces that I participated in, and I know how they work. And again, it's got to be in conjunction with the district attorney's office. But as far as the DA's office running it on its own, if it's something that's going to work, then I'm never opposed, because the end result for all of us is to go after the bad guys and make this place a safe county. But I can tell you that it's been run the last 3 years by the DA's office, and I think I need that opportunity as a new sheriff to at least use my experience to make it better, and that's all I'm asking for. Thank you.
Thank you. Holly?
So do you want me to just chat, or do you want to ask questions? What's the easiest way to...
Well, I didn't know if you had an opening statement or something you wanted to address, but the question asked by Rich Tarantin is, why keep it in the DA's office?
So I think that requires a little bit of background, in my opinion. A couple things, just as far as this, the starting point. I don't think that there's any other process in Ulster County that could do the work that Urch is doing and has been doing. And that's, you know, we could start again. You know, if we were on an island, we might start again and say, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. We don't have that luxury, and we have inherited a process that's been in place for a long, long time. And that process is that there are multiple jurisdictions at play. The nature of the work that Urgent does, you need the expertise and the ability of the professionals in the team. You also need to have local intel. And all of this stuff is intel-driven, honestly. And the Sheriff's Department doesn't have, the way it's currently set up is the Sheriff's Department is very strong in certain jurisdictions and not as strong in other jurisdictions. And, you know, a couple of examples are Kingston and Saugerties and, or maybe Lloyd, and, you know, there are a lot of different areas that the state police work a little bit in Ellenville. The state police don't work much in Saugerties. You know, there's a little bit of a territory going on in the different agencies. And one of the ways that Urgent has been so successful is to marriage that local knowledge and intel with the professional expertise that they have in doing this kind of work. And I don't know of another process that would be as successful. A couple things. I'm not a big cost guy. Easy for me to say. I've never had a discussion with anyone that would say that the urgent process, the task force can generate enough money to pay for much of anything. I never thought that was a good model or a good idea. And I think it has a sour taste for a lot of people. And the idea is that the task force has to go out and seize things from people in order to pay their own salary. That doesn't look right to me. It doesn't smell like it. I don't like that at all. And I think that this is, I wholly agree that this is a process that should be paid for by the county. When Ulster left, that was nothing but a boondoggle. I mean, we had a guy that Ulster PD had given us. They did it was 100% an urgent task force process. There was a lawsuit. I could give you the details, and all of you would just say, I can't believe that, but anyway, neither here nor there. Guy has since been convicted and went to state prison, but he brought a lawsuit, and the county attorney at the time said, we're not going to defend it. I said, B, you have to defend this. This is clearly county County action. And so Jim said, well, screw you, I'm out. And I don't blame him. I would have done the same thing, frankly. Now, that indemnification process has been taken care of, but there are this financial kickback thing that was never presented properly, and I don't think it would work. If you want a task force and you want to be successful, then I think you pay for it. And, you know, when you start talking about the cost of this kind of work, it's substantial. It's a little bit like education. You know, what do you think it costs to have public education? Well, I would say, what do you think it costs if you didn't have it? And that's that's my attitude about the task force. We're doing things here that nobody else is doing, period. You look at the fentanyl problem. In the last, I was trying to get some stats together. I was unsuccessful. But, you know, I have 4 or 5 cases this month that these guys went out and took fentanyl off the street. One in Ellenville, one in Lloyd, one in Sorority, maybe 2 in Ellenville, like two in Ellenville. There's nobody else is doing that. So you take, you know, you unfund Urgent, and now you've got... You have a vacuum that's not going to be filled by anybody else. I mean, you look. Let's take a local agency. Anyone, doesn't matter. Take one of the best ones. I mean, I think DuPaul's got a great team. I think Sorbis is developing a really good team. They are not equipped to do these kind of investigations. It takes months to get somebody in a position where they can start to do what we need to do to make bonds. You know, you can't walk up to drug dealers are not brilliant, but they're not idiots. You can't walk up and say, "Hi, I'm a police officer. I'd like to buy some heroin." You know, it doesn't work that way. You have to work a long time and push some information, and eventually, if we're successful, we start to get information, and then that intel drives, sometimes a single buy, and sometimes it drives, you know, a sweep. But either way, that takes a long time. We just had one. We worked with the feds up in Ellenville where we had a wiretap. There is not a local agency in this county that has the resources to run a wiretap. You know, you need this kind of task force. So if you want to say, okay, I got a good idea. We're going to do away with all the local agencies. We're going to start one dynamic county task force. Great. Well, good luck with that. You know, we have something in place that we have to work with. And I think that the only model that would be successful is a model like the Urgent Task Force. Back when this started, the state police was the power investigative unit in Ulster County. They're not anymore. I mean, that's the bottom line. The work that Urgent does is far exceeds the in this area the work that state police does. The state police, their resources have been drawn in different places, and they have different focuses. And if the county, and I would suggest that we should, if the county is going to focus on the effects that selling fentanyl and heroin have in Ulster County, you need a task force like this. And that's just, I wholly believe that. Now, the best way to put it together, we can talk about that. My own opinion is that one of the problems that has been historically an issue with Urgent is the, I want to call it the testosterone effect. Okay, so you've got a guy from Kingston who's maybe a lieutenant, and he works with the task force, and he's taking orders from a sergeant. They get all bent out of shape about that. Nobody gets bent out of shape about taking orders from the DA, because when people say, I have this case, I said, well, actually, no, none of you have any cases. I have these cases. These cases are DA cases, all of them. And so one of the things that I can bring to the table, the DAs can bring to the table, is that you try to eliminate this competition and some of the lack of cooperation that can generate. Now, frankly, I think the task force has worked extremely well, and we've worked through a lot of those issues. But those issues come up, and those issues come up maybe secondary to the financial issue as far as people working with the task force or not. The manner that they were set up financially is fraught with peril. I'm amazed that some of these agencies have stuck in as long as they have, because they're, the town boards, the supervisors are looking at this from a different perspective than I have, and they're looking at it financially. We talked many times with the mayor. you can't really have a task force in Ulster County dealing with drugs unless you're going to deal with Kingston. I mean, come on. You know, Kingston is one of the, it's, any of us need to hook up, we can run downtown tonight and we're all set up. I mean, it's just, you know, Kingston is a place where we have to be involved and have the knowledge, the intel that comes. We're talking about drugs tonight, but historically this has been a gang, this team has been the way that we have been combating the gang problem in Ulster County. And again, there is nobody that does that other than Urgent. One of the first times I went over there when Frank was still the under, and I walked into their Urgent, boardroom. I was stunned. I've been doing this stuff for so many years, and I was stunned. I stood there, and they had pictures of this guy, and they had drawn pictures of lines over here, and this guy over here, and he's working with this guy. I mean, you wouldn't believe the intel that these people have put together. And we did some pretty good work with gangs. I mean, the statistics that we have, that I don't have all of them, but something like 330 gang members. No, you know, these are the verified gang members of Bloods and Crips and the Latin Kings that have been arrested by Urgent Task Force the last 10 years. It's just no, and there isn't anybody else in the county that's bringing cases like that to me. So I haven't answered Rich's question yet, but he gave me the floor, so this is what happens. So who should run the task force? Again, in my judgment, I think that it makes sense to have the DA in charge, but not in the operations. I mean, I don't think you certainly don't want me to be in charge of the operation, the day-to-day operation. Who's going to be assigned here? What are we going to do with this guy? Things like that. Billy's doing that right now. The next team is going to make a decision as to whether he stays or somebody else stays. And, my own opinion is that there's nobody else in the county that has as strong background as he does, but that's just one man's opinion. But that's not the position you're talking about. You're not talking about the command position. You're talking about the oversight position. And I think that going to the public, there's a benefit to have the DA, and there's maybe a buffer to say that these, not all drug cases are. How can I say that? There's some segments of our population that don't support arresting people for selling fentanyl. I get that, okay? I happen to think that's the way to, that's one of the things that's necessary in this battle that we're in. Having the DA there and taking away the emphasis on money, I think offers support to the public that may have some of the concerns this is the wrong approach to enforcement with regard to narcotics. So those are some of the comments I had.
Do you want to start questions? Laura, you had a question?
Yeah, I did procedurally. The word that I've gotten is that if somebody gets into trouble, there is an opportunity for them to maybe make amends by working as a confidential informant for Urgent. So you're putting out several pounds of drugs on the streets or guns, and then these big roundups that take place are from those sales to the confidential informant. Likewise with the weapons, I believe that's how the King kid got executed with a call that was made from the Ulster County Jail because he had turned and provided information. So, he's not here anymore. Do you foresee Urgent changing that practice and actually going out and getting the larger dealers instead of, creating this drug flow on the streets intentionally?
I can answer that. Urgent and law enforcement doesn't create drug flow anywhere at any time. There is a term for that in law enforcement. It's called a reverse. And I don't know that we've done a reverse in this county since I've been back here from the FBI, and that's 10 years, 12 years.
We have never done one since I've been the DA.
So,
I can guarantee that.
We take drugs off the street. We don't put them on the street. Where you're talking about taking somebody who's been arrested and offering them an opportunity to cooperate with law enforcement to go to their buyer, where they their source is, so that we can take more drugs off the street, that is a law enforcement technique that has been used. It's a solid technique, and it will continue to be used if you have a drug task force, because that's where your source and your information comes from. It's we work up the ladder. If we get a street seller or buyer, we're more inclined to go with the DA and say we want to try to offer this guy a little bit of a break. This is what we purchased from him. This is how it was purchased. And we would now like to get him, he's willing to cooperate with us, to go to his supplier. And then we try to work up the ladder to his supplier. It is a ladder. It's a stepping game. As Holly mentioned, there are occasions where you can... We've had two narcotics wires on blood clot and the recent one in Ellenville, and we have run a homicide wire here that we ran out of the DA's office with the state police, and the homicide was a missing Woodstock resident. The homicide ended up taking place in Greene County, but as a result of that wire, the three perpetrators of that homicide were put away, and as a result of the narcotics wires, numerous gang members and drug suppliers were put away. So if you're under the inception or concept, or you have the perspective that a task force puts drugs on the street, that's totally misplaced. The information is wrong. Your perception of how it works is wrong. The goal of the guys that work on the street every day is to take drugs off, and that's all we do. We do not put any drugs on. If you think we do, I would be openly willing to listen to the scenario where we have put drugs on the street. Because, to my knowledge, it hasn't happened.
And he's right. That's never been a factor of law enforcement ever.
Not since I've been here. And we actually had a long discussion one time for intelligent reasons where the goal was the right goal, and I said, I can't do that. Yeah. I said, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
So if I gave you the name of the confidential informant, even though the 25 people arrested were people that he was selling to, and his brother, who is the dealer, is still out there driving nice cars and has multiple houses, would that, you think that may kind of jar your memory? Okay.
Well, I'd love to know who you're talking about. Yeah.
I will say that the informants are tricky. They always are. They work both sides of the fence. That's a norm. That happens as well. So
part of the skill of handling an informant, a confidential informant, is knowing whether you're being played or whether you have control over that informant.
You mean the guy that went out the back door with my money that time when Van O was in front?
Yep,
that one.
Yeah. He
now, as far as going after the stores, I agree wholeheartedly. We're only an hour and a half north of New York City. I can assure you we have stash houses here from people in New York. And the drugs come probably from New York. And have I seen any major... we have one case where an individual was driving and he was delivering drugs to SUNY New Paltz. And not only was he dealing through SUNY New Paltz, he was going to other colleges throughout the upstate area. When we talk about the intangibles that you don't see, that's one right there. So here's a case where the kid's driving a car up here, bringing drugs, different types
HIDA.
Of drugs.
That's why we're designated as a HIDA.
Up to SUNY New Paltz, and he gets arrested by a deputy that pulls him over. And then his source is down in New York City. And so we related information to law enforcement down in New York City. When they make those arrests, you're not going to see the numbers here, but that's an arrest of a source that was selling or sending drugs up here. And so are some of the intangibles that you don't see.
Do you have a question, Trey?
I do, but Lynn, Well, I have multiple questions, but one thing that I would do, it seems like there's agreement that urgent's necessary. There's disagreement about the way it's been run in the past and who should ultimately be in charge. But DA Carnwright made a distinction between command and operations. Is that a distinction you'd be comfortable with? In other words, you're running operations, he's running the sort of administrative end, an oversight end. Is that a distinction you're comfortable with, or does it require you to have control over both?
Actually, they run the operations now. The operations are run by the sergeant, who's in the squad area every day. He's overseen now, since we restructured it, by a lieutenant. They run the day-to-day, who's going where, who's doing what buys. I get input on a daily basis. We review all the, if there's any search warrants or anything like that, they're reviewed up at our office to make sure everything is the way we need it to be for court. And then we meet weekly to push everything together. About the only, I hold the glue together. We have a Kingston component that has been controversial since it started. They're not really inurgent. Excuse me, they work at their own facility down at the Kingston PD. Again, that's a political thing. We've tried, but not having been able, successful, to bring them on board, we have embedded an urgent member in their cadre down at Kingston PD, and the goal in that is to try to make sure that the information, if something leaves the city and goes out, is immediately transmitted or capable of being transmitted to the office staff up here, because he's a deputy and he's responsible to the sergeant. That's who he answers to. That's not the best scenario either. And my only take on it, command to me, I've run task force for 40 years at the federal level. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other who's in command. The only thing I will say to you that I'm absolutely certain of, and I think you've heard it here from several people, is that the financial structure of this task force has to be corrected. These town supervisors have, and police chiefs have, the same issue that you have with your employees in the county. They are fiscally responsible to their voters, and if they assign somebody to the task force, they have one person that's gone all the time that they're paying for. He's very rarely in the town, or he comes and he goes. If you're going to run a task force, now again, I come from the federal side, so task forces are always set up and run by the federal government, and they pay the freight. They have the money to pay the freight. But when it comes to vehicles, indemnification, overtime, not salary, but overtime, that's the way they're set up. And when you make a commitment to that, they understand that. That's why Woodstock just left.
Just for clarity, so salary and all commensurate benefits are local.
Correct.
And overtime, supplies, cars, whatever equipment is required, suggesting?
Not overtime, just cars and everything else. We supply.
Right. But the suggestion is, if we want to pull in the towns, overtime would be, because that's the one thing when you have a 2% tax cap, you can't control the overtime required on a particular.
And that's the one thing that can be frustrating to a street supervisor like Jay or to Abe, is that if they're running an operation, drug dealers work on their own schedule. Their time is different than on your watch and my watch. And they set something up for a certain time, more than likely it's running over. And if it becomes successful, they're going to follow it with search warrants, which take time to write, time to get approved. So you're looking at large swaths of time where these guys are on the street. If he can't approve the overtime for the local jurisdiction members that are on the task force, we've had a couple where they've been out and the guy says, well, I got to go home. I can't get overtime. I got to go home. I got to leave. You can't operate like that. It's not only a problem administratively, it's a safety issue. So my recommendation would be, if the county is going to run this, run it right, pick, and then manage it the way you need it managed.
But we just changed the terrain of the debate.
I agree with Bill wholeheartedly, right. But there are some other issues that we're not discussing. I've seen here my observations since being a sheriff. Since I was a trooper, the city of Kingston has always been territorial. That's not a secret. They continue to do that. The city of Kingston PD, it's the only city in the county. and they're very territorial. But one of the things that kind of, you know, I scratch my head is that there's a memorandum of agreements that are being drawn up. There's one thing if you're in an adjoining town, but a memorandum of agreement, let's say, with the city of Kingston and Saugerty. It's not an adjoining town. And they can do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But their biggest complaint is that they don't have the manpower to send someone up. For example, if we have a case in Shandaken, which is rare, but they won't send their people up there because they want their people in the city. I went and I spoke to the mayor and the chief, and I said, I actually did a pilot program this summer with the stabilization unit, and we went to Esopus when they were complaining about speeders. We went to Ellenville when they were complaining about a quality of life issue, and I gave that up to work. Well, if you have a quality of life issue, we're able to send that stabilization unit, because the goal here really is to bring the city back on board, and that's why the change was made for the DA to run the operation in 2017. But like I said, what I said earlier, it just hasn't worked. And the local municipalities, with these memorandums of agreement, are circumventing. For example, the sheriff is really the only one that can deputize somebody to work, along with the DAs. If there's a DA's office, the DA can actually, if there's a DA investigator assigned to the case, they can work anywhere in the county. But these memorandum of agreements are an issue, because if you have a task force, you want everybody to come on board. And I know that the DA has tried, and I know the previous administration has tried to get these entities on board. And I think what Bill said is right. If you can have the monies to offset some of their costs, then maybe the issues can go away. And it doesn't. The main purpose of any task force is to go after organized crime entities. That's really what we're talking about here. And whether it's the DA that runs it, I prefer to run it. Obviously, these are my people. The majority of the people that are on this task force are members of the Ulster County Sheriff's Office. The budget is the Ulster County Sheriff's Office. Regardless of what happened in the past, as a newly elected officer, running the sheriff's office and the new incoming DA, I'm willing to sit down and it's working fine right now the way it is with the glitches that we have and the problems that we have. There is a command structure in place, and we do need the DA's office. Remember, they're the ones that prosecute these cases. If the cases aren't prosecutable, we have no case, and we're running in place.
It sounds like what you're saying to me is if you deal with the financial component, then this argument about who runs the agency, who's at the administrative top, is less important.
Well, I think that what the DA was saying earlier, that because of previous what happened in the past and the territorial issues, I'm willing to go and talk to those chiefs and let them know that I have no ego. And being that the majority of the folks that are on the task force are my folks, and it's my budget, the only way to bring these other entities in conjunction with the DA, is what Bill exactly said. You have to offset some of their costs.
What kind of costs are you looking at? I mean, give me a ballpark figure. What kind of numbers are you looking at to make it work better, or, you know, ease some of the pressures that are there?
Hey, why don't you jump in there? This is Detective Lieutenant Abe Markowitz.
Well, as the sheriff already said, the vast majority of equipment is already provided and purchased either by us out of budgetary money to the sheriff's office or with asset forfeiture money. So if we're talking about additional funding, that would be essentially, there's really only two other components. It would be overtime and salary benefit. I'm not advancing an argument that we should absorb salary and fringe benefits and or overtime. I'm simply saying, in my estimation, those are the only two remaining factors that the individual municipalities are still carrying the freight for. In MOUs, even in the current MOU, it talks about, you know, municipalities agree to help offset costs, you know, buying staples and paper clips. That's not, we're not talking about that, because we have all that, and we provide those things. We provide the cars. We budget for car. If we're not successful for one reason or another in, let me back that statement up half a moment. Ideally, we would love to have all of our cars be the product of seizure slash forfeiture. That simply isn't the reality. Drug dealers employ countermeasures that later create legal impediments to successfully forfeiting their cars. So the next step to that is budgeting money for purchasing cars. What we can't get by taking, then we budget to purchase. We are successful largely in offsetting a lot of those costs because for both strategic and tactical reasons, we will not generally endeavor to purchase one new $30,000 car. I would rather purchase two $15,000 used cars based on anticipated service cycles and the length of time, a certain amount of time that the identity of that car is good for. After that, the car is known as a police car. So anyway, we already do all of that. So by the way, this is Detective Sergeant Jay Brook. He is the current first line supervisor for Urgent. Lieutenant Joe Sudo was the last detective sergeant who Jay replaced, and Joe replaced me when I was the two sergeants ago, from March of 15 through December 31st of 16. So you have from 15 through today sitting first line supervisors, or former first line supervisors sitting.
Again, we're not saying it's salaries, even though task forces, that's what they do. They pay for salaries. We're talking probably offset overtime costs for those.
Which is right now, if I look at the table here, is about 11,000, correct? Or
Could be more.
I mean, it could be more because
very rough. The estimates are very rough, but based upon
extrapolating
costs from one place to every place. The costs are different each place. And they also understate the table understates the cost of this because it doesn't include supervising personnel and so on.
So what are we talking about, dollars and cents? You needed a number, a ballpark number.
Depends how many agencies are going to come back in.
Tracy?
Can I just ask one more question?
Sure.
Are we talking 10,000? Are we talking 5,000? Are we talking 25,000? Are we talking 50,000?
Well, each agency is different. The town of Shandaken pays a certain amount for overtime. And Paul's pays a different amount for overtime. Right. So it depends.
Do you have a 3-year deputy or a 15-year sergeant? Yeah. It's hard.
And let me ask one other question. How much money is in the seizure account as of now?
Seize assets or forfeitures?
The money you can use to operate.
Forfeitures. Not, you can't use the seized assets.
Seizures have not been complete. Those are pending. Forfeitures are completed. I want to say, the last time I checked, and admittedly, please don't hold me too close to this, because I haven't checked recently. It was somewhere around 80?
That's about right.
About $80,000.
And what do you take in a year on average for that account?
It's all low.
Well, this year we've got about 150 this year.
It jumps, it varies.
Because you can have a single seizure, which we just had 2 months ago. We had one single seizure, one hit, one house, one time, one case, $100,000. So it's very hard to anticipate.
I understand, but on the average, what each month is they get in the course of a year? You don't have to get that information now. But
I have it.
Why don't we get the questions answered, because those are all good points, and then let's see what the steps are after this meeting, which may be trying to pull it all together. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, real quick, just going back to 2013, from 2013 and 2018, the average seems to be somewhere in the $60,000, $70,000 a year, a high year being 2013 over 300, a low year being...
Is that seized that you're saying?
Seized.
Right,
which does not necessarily mean successfully forfeited.
Yes.
Right, that's correct.
Right.
And the only other thing that just for the accountants in the room that you have to remember is the forfeiture process generally takes a reasonably long time. 6 months would be kind of like quick. So, it might show in a 2016 as a seizure, but not, it might not be re usable or available till 17, in some cases 18.
And because that follows the conviction of the individuals that were arrested at the time of the seizure, correct?
Among other factors.
Okay.
There are other factors, whether it's a state or federal adoption, whether it's a judicial versus administrative forfeiture proceeding, because, for example, an administrative forfeiture proceeding is independent of any conviction. So there are other factors at work, but a good safe bet is I've never seen anything less than 6-7 months from date of arrest to date of here you go.
Okay. Tracy?
So the forfeiture revenues provided in the report are very low. In some cases, it's, you know, in 14, it shows only $6,800. But I want to just agree with what I think DA Carnwright was saying, in that it makes me really uncomfortable to have a conversation that it all equates this program with effective seizures. When we start talking in terms of, oh, we'll get this much, or we can make it happen by getting this vehicle, I start to just check out. That's not, it makes me so uncomfortable. This program, if it's going to be funded, I agree it needs to be funded, not reliant on anything related to seizures at all.
Wrong
motivation. That's my take. And it's very briefly touched on in the report, but just on a national level and bigger pictures and Supreme Court cases, seizures make me uncomfortable. Several years ago, DA Carnwright came to Ways and Means, and you talked at length about the fact that Kingston, when you were appealing for another investigator, talking about the impact of the lack of Kingston's participation. And I took it to heart, and here we are still today without Kingston's participation, as you talk about having to kind of work around that system. And if it's just a financial equation for Kingston, then that, I think, is something that probably could be addressed through these means and hopefully through new leadership. But my other takeaway from the report is my concern about what's brought up in here about a lack of transparency, a lack of metric, a lack of reporting, even what the Benjamin Center has provided in terms of the graphs, in terms of, not so much cost, but you have cases. I want to know the outcomes. I want to know, how do we measure the success, and what are your goals for the program? I want to have a sense that I get that we might start with street level to get on that ladder you spoke about, but what I want to know, and in your reference, Sheriff, to the New York City case, I count that as a win for Ulster County. If you came and put that in a report and said, we didn't get this arrest, but New York City got the arrest because of what we did, to me, that's an Ulster County win, even though it doesn't rack up in anyone's arrest report here. But I want to know from the outset that the goals aren't street level, that the goals are higher, and I want to know how you're meeting them. That's where my push and pull is on this, because I could see approving funding if I had a sense of a broader picture with defined goals and defined measurable metrics. And that's something, Dr. Benjamin, when you started all this, you said, you gave the background of the report, and then you said, well, and I said X, Y, and Z, and so you might ask, well, why am I saying we should continue? Because I think if an academic were to read your report, that'd be the first question they'd ask, is why is your conclusion to continue with Urgen? Because you're saying all these things that didn't work. You're saying all these shortcomings, and some of which all come back again to the accountability factor. So that's just my concern. I mean, I'm hopeful that we can get to a point that we can understand, in terms of the DA or the sheriff having the, you know, operational, sheriff has operational, but the other authority, I don't yet have the answer. I'd be curious to see what other task force across the state do. I mean, I know you said some of the bigger ones sit with the DA, but I'd like to better understand what it would mean to not have it in the DA, because that changed happened, but in the legislature, to my knowledge, we were aware of the change, but I'm not aware of how procedurally that's changed the function on a day-to-day in terms of urgent. I don't, you know, it's just, it's a move from one department to another, but I'd like to know functionally what it would mean to have it sit with the sheriff versus the DA, but of course having the DA's participation. Because I'm assuming if it moved back to the sheriff, the DA would still be a participatory partner in it.
They will be until the end of the year.
Okay. Well, nothing's going to happen.
As long as I'm the DA, we're going to be a part of this. So the short answer is I don't have much control over what happens after January.
But I think it has. I think the DA's office has to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. There's no idea to doubt that it has to be a part of it.
Well, let me just, if I may, the soft evidence and hard evidence. Mm-hmm. If you talk to all the major players in delivering a program, and they say they have to have the structure, and they're at odds with each other, which happens to be the case. So they have consensus on the need for the structure. They have dissensus on how it should be structured. That's evidence. But you can't go out and get the numbers because the numbers aren't being systematically collected. They aren't being systematically collected at a central place. You probably could go out to every agency and ask them for numbers and see if you can get comparisons. But I became convinced from what I would call the soft evidence, the interview evidence, that we shouldn't throw this away, but I also came convinced that it was dysfunctional. So that's the answer to that point about social science. Mm-hmm. It's not; it wouldn't be a publishable journal article because of the social science evidence. So I think that's true. But I also think as a report it's compelling to say we've got something that the people who are doing this think it's important. I think it's important. We're in the middle of a crisis that's reappeared and gotten more virulent on this matter, so let's make it make this work rather than start over or try to start over, but let's make it accountable, let's structure it right, and so on. So that's the reason for the conclusion.
Jonathan, you had something?
Yeah, just based on some of the conversations and the statements, it's been mentioned, but I think needs to be really amplified as, you know, I think an issue when it comes to both the viability and the future of Urgent and, you know, the level of effectiveness is the participation of localities throughout the county, which is a trend that seems, you know, is an important issue. And I think it was touched upon too that it is important to look at it. You have to look at it in different viewpoints, from law enforcement to the viewpoint of a supervisor to the viewpoint of a police chief. You know, for example, in Woodstock, where I represent, you know, it's a police, and then I think a trend common among smaller police forces where they're very reliant on, you know, part-time officers. There isn't, you know, a large number of full-time officers or even, you know, in cases of a detective. But then again, I don't think any of these law enforcement, I've never heard of law enforcement, local law enforcement in my district say that they could get anywhere. Urgent provides the resources and the service that it's just impossible for a local municipality to have. For example, Woodstock, I think I was on Ohio Mountain Road in the recent years that Urgent had a very important, you know, heroin bust.
Al Martin.
Yep. And, you know, that's not something that I think is very likely to occur, you know, or even, you know, small town forces even going to have. But yet for Urgent to be successful, you know, I think their participation is very important. So, you know, how do we get to the point, and I'm curious if there is a plan going forward of kind of re-upping efforts to grow participation countywide, because without the participation of these localities, I'm concerned, again, about the effectiveness and the viability of Urgent. And their ability to provide, you know, that service, like the DA and the sheriff have said, you know, wouldn't be happening without Urgent.
Your point is very well taken, but Woodstock just left
Urgent. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
And the reason they left was because they hooked up with a federal task force.
Mm-hmm.
They're supplying manpower to a federal task force, but that federal task force is paying them mm-hmm. and giving them certain items of equipment, and they're hoping, according to my conversations with the chief, they're hoping that they can turn this into a budgetary plus for them. Now, I don't...
Are they still connected with you, though? Is that federal task force informing urgent? I mean, if we're all out there trying to do the same thing, which is, you know, reduce gangs and get the drugs off the street.
I think the task force, I think the drug enforcement task force, which is up in Albany, has folks that works for them up in Albany, not necessarily in Woodstock.
Mm-hmm. And there's situations like that with other local police forces in the county?
Very astute question you just asked, by the way.
But is there similar situations like that happening with other localities in the
county? To my knowledge, I know that the DEA task force from Albany has been around and has attempted to bring in members from other departments, but the only one that nibbled was Woodstock.
So is it fair to say...
It happened within the county. The SS took the town of Starkey's detective that was signed to urgent into the CAC.
So is it fair to say the towns see the value of urgent, they understand it, but for some reason, whether it impacts, it becomes a financial question for them not to participate, and if we can resolve some of those issues? I mean, I got to believe that every town, whether they have... A local law enforcement or not, your urgent task force is going where the issues are, regardless of the town. And so it's about creating goodwill and an added value so that they see that this is something that's going to benefit them. I mean, we unfund it, and what happens?
Can I just try and answer that? Ironically, some of the smaller towns that don't have police agencies, the sheriff has satellite offices, and we're covered there. that part's okay. I don't want to throw a wrench in the works, but I'm the only one here that happens to think that they ought to pay for the salaries as well. That's what happened at CAC when Sinagra says, "Look, I got a guy in urgent. Urgent's great. I support it. The whole thing. These people are going to pay my officer to go to the CAC." So he pulled them out, and he goes back to his town board and says, "You know, I cut money out of the budget." Money, I think, is driving the issue of cooperation, except for in Kingston. Kingston's a whole different thing, which I'm happy to talk about.
Could you talk about that?
Could you? Sure. Yeah, I want to because it's one of our biggest.
Oh, yeah, it is one of our problems. Yeah, yeah. I think Juan wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, let's go there.
But it sounds like it's the heart of it is money, which is your point.
Yeah,
everybody understands its value, but it's money.
Not in Kingston. I would say that's only part of the issue in Kingston. So. And just, you know, Tracy, you asked a few questions and then nobody had a chance to answer them. But, you know, as far as goals are concerned, I don't want this group to overlook the two other goals we have in addition to the opioid crisis, which is gangs and guns. Gangs are, right now, I'm not going to say we're okay, but we're in a place where we weren't 10 years ago, and it's only because of urgent. And guns... when I took over, I said to the guys, "Look, if you can get an illegal gun off the street, get it off the street. If it's not a prosecution, it's okay with me. If you can take a gun off the street so that gun's not going to be used in a crime, do that." And there are untold numbers of illegal handguns that we have seized that didn't go toward a prosecution, because sometimes we'd say, "Okay, if you give me information, I'll go take this gun, but I won't use you as a witness, that kind of thing." So
can I just, sure, when you say untold, do you quantify this somewhere? I mean, that's the thing.
No, I don't.
Why? I mean, that's a real problem.
Give me four or five more people, and I'll give you all the stats.
No,
the short answer is I don't have all those stats. But I can tell you, now, there was a question about, you know, how can we have transparency? Is this a good program, bad program? I can tell you this, Tracy. There's two cases outside of what Urgent has brought to me this year that are fentanyl cases. Every other fentanyl case this year is an urgent case. Now, you know, every case that's prosecuted comes to my desk. And so I have the stats? No. We have a number of people keeping a number of different stats, and, you know, some of them are more accurate than others. But I can tell you personally that I have two state police car stops that we picked up some fentanyl, and every other fentanyl case is an urgent case. So I don't know what else that tells you, but I mean, that's, you know what I'm saying? These guys are doing the job.
Respectfully, I appreciate that, but with absent actual facts, and this this was an issue those number of years ago when you came to Ways and Means. Absent the ability to track and respond, for example, in here where it says cases, I want to know convictions. I need to make sense of this. And
sure.
So, and I think all of us, I mean, as legislators, we're charged with approving the funds, and without actually having a sense. So with all due respect, I think that you should be tracking illegal drug gun seizures, no matter how you're getting them, so that later you can say, this is what happened, XYZ. These are the statistics. These are how many cases were brought to us. These are how many convictions. This is what they were charged. This is what they were convicted of. I probably don't even know all the questions that I want to be asking, because I feel like the more you could break down the information for us, the more you could substantiate the program. And that goes across both departments.
It also informs the program, though. And I've seen where people weren't capturing data, were not tracking numbers. When they started to, it started to shift thinking and started to get people looking at things they may not have looked at before.
So I
get what you guys are about, getting out there, getting the job done. But you're also coming before us with a question mark about money.
And
there's got to be a way we can get our arms around
transparency. Every dime that's spent, there's a receipt for it, tracked.
I'm not talking about
all the arrests. Every year, the arrests are posted on our annual report. So those numbers are there.
This program, I asked the key people in this program to show me the minutes of their meetings. There weren't any.
Yeah.
There weren't any.
What I did say, Dr. Benjamin, was I'm not going to give them to you because they're confidential.
Well, meetings on the management side of this, there are no minutes. They were casually kept over the years. This was casually administered.
Well, I can't speak for the past, and maybe Lieutenant Sudo can speak.
And to back up what the sheriff said, we're discussing sensitive cases where there's confidential information of ongoing investigations. As we speak today, those investigations are still ongoing, and they involve multiple agencies and jurisdictions. We cannot release the minutes.
I'm from a police family. I'm respectful of the work. But the fact of the matter is, if you're a governing board and they're keeping records of governance, there should be records of governance. You don't have to say John Doe was arrested on Tuesday for heroin.
Well, the minutes have pertinent information that are confidential, Doctor.
Well,
you should still be able to track the transaction.
I have high regard for you, but I interviewed you, and you said since I've been sheriff, there have been no meetings.
No, we've had meetings. What we didn't have was executive meetings.
The executive board of this organization has no minutes.
We have had meetings.
Well, I'm just illustrating that the accountability could be a little better in terms of, professionally, be a little better in running the operation.
It's a point well taken. So, as far as the prosecutions, I do have those cases, but I don't break them down as to which agency brings it to me. So, for instance, you know, at the end of the year, I always send a report out as how many cases we've had and what the, you know, success rate or, well, with the conviction rate, I don't know if you call it a success rate. And so I do have numbers like that, but I don't have it broken down. Well, this is a case that generated from urgent. Or generated from the state police. So that's, and it's too bad I don't. I wish I did.
Yeah,
urgent does have numbers. We generated a report through 2018, which is really impressive, but I agree with everyone that it would be great to have better statistics to go forward and say this is what we've been doing. And everybody in this room that's been working with Urgent has heard me say that for about 10 years. I said if people knew how good you guys were, it would be so much easier for me. But the nature of what we do is, you know, we're not standing there out there and say this is what we've done, and maybe that's a fault. But anyway, I could get you a success rate on prosecutions. I can tell you, generally speaking, the work that Urgent does is fabulous. I mean, they, you know, the equipment we use, everything is recorded. It's not like the old days where you have somebody come in and say, really, you want me to believe this? And we have videos, we have phone calls, we have backup people. It's really top-notch work. So it makes me look good. I mean, I win these cases, what can I say?
I don't think anyone's questioning, you know, the work that Urgent does and how valuable they are to the county, and they want to continue. question becomes...
We're trying to help you with that. I got it.
You know, how do we go forward?
Okay, okay.
Let's go forward with the City of Kingston.
Okay, City of Kingston.
Right, well, also, oh, we yes, have to defend ourselves to constituents.
I get it. Like,
we've
got to
say,
like,
the program works here.
I know, I hear you. I hear, it's one of the things that I have not been good at in my tenure, and I'll...
I don't have to worry about it.
So... In most of the jurisdictions that we deal with, I think the real key is financial. If we paid for salaries, people would be more willing to participate. Kingston has its own thing going on with the political environment that they're in. It's a complicated political environment for people that work in criminal justice. How's that? That's pretty delicate, right?
Yeah, that's more than I would put it.
Okay. So, just so you know, what we've done when Paul was the sheriff, since Juan has been there, I've been down there 6 times this Sunday, sat down with the mayor and said, look, this is an important program, and you're an important part of it, and this is what we need to do. And we've gotten we'll call you back someday. When Bill came on board, he actually went, and we got what we thought were some promises that didn't quite pan out, but what is happening right now is that although Urgent isn't, I'm sorry, Kingston, their investigative unit is not part of Urgent. We have a man embedded there, and there's now a sharing of information that wasn't present before. They really should be part of the team. The mayor is not going to go there.
But why? And so when you say that the policing issue, I think I know what you mean.
It's a
could you be a little more?
Yes, yeah.
Because there's a hostility to policing in?
Yes, yes.
Or a perception that...
No, I would say hostility is a fair comment. There, you have an environment in portions of Kingston that are just... there. You know, we all know this. It's an anti-law enforcement environment. And so the mayor is he's an elected official. The chief serves the mayor. There's a lot of people walking around on eggshells down there, and that's a problem for the county district attorney, because a lot of stuff that goes on, particularly in days gone by with the gangs, the gang problem originated in the City of Kingston. It's pushed out a little bit to Sorbies and a little bit out to Ellenville, but going back 10 years, I don't know if you guys were mindful. We had some real, real legitimate gang problems in the City of Kingston, which don't exist today. So, I don't think that if we said we'll pay the salary of one of your guys to come into Urgent, I don't know the mayor would do that, because the Matthews things, it was a dark day for me, I gotta tell you. When I said to Bill, you gotta go down and be there when they open that safe and see. It's the first time he ever said no to me. We've been together for a long time, and I said, no, you got to do that. You can't let them open that safe without us there. And it was a dark day. That's all. It was a dark day. And that has stung Kingston politicians, and it remains a stain. I tell you how this, talk about, in my opinion, silly. He said, well, before I ever joined, you'd have to change the name. I said, okay, we'll change the name. You know what I mean? It's just there's a political... reality.
To what?
It doesn't matter, just as long as it's not Urgent. And I said, fine, we'll change the name.
I had the same conversation,
right?
And the same thing happened.
Right? And look, all of you guys run for office, and so you understand politics, and you understand your constituents, and I don't know that... Well, let me say this. I was not able to convince the mayor to become a partner in Urgent, but the compromise we have struck has been working. We have and I said to him, I said, honestly, you got this wrong. He said, I can't afford to give you one of my detectives to go and investigate cases out of the City of Kingston. I said, no. We're giving you people. We're bringing resources to you. We're going to help you with the problem that you have, and your constituents will be safer. And that's the reality of the situation. But politically, that I wasn't able to get it done. So.
And I agree with the DA. I've seen an operation that was done in the City of Kingston, and we invited them to come, and they want nothing to do with it because they don't, the political, there's politics that take place with the folks that work in the city. They're not even part of our records management. Sorgatys and Kingston, I believe, are the only two in the entire county that are not part of the records management program that we have. And is it territorial? Sure.
Look, I'll back him up a little bit, because there were times when we did things that I thought were too strong. I mean, there was one.
The raid where they were using.
Yeah, I said, you know, I got a call, and they said, "What the hell's going on?" I said, "Geez, I'm not sure."
Yeah. I didn't hear that.
Oh, we had a raid, and they brought in, was it a helicopter?
Yeah.
I'm like, what are we doing?
Morning,
so
early morning.
Yeah, and so you know, as a mayor, you get calls that you don't want to get at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m, and then the DA gets calls, and he didn't want to get them either. But those are things that we've corrected. It's one of the things that, you know, when Billy and Juan and I think all agree. Really agree that there's a certain way to do this and certainly not to do this, and some of those old school tactics are not in play right now. And I've said that to the mayor. I said, "Okay, I get that. I didn't like it any more than you did. We're not doing that." But short answer is, I don't see them becoming part of the team.
It's unfortunate because I think we have a new sheriff, and I think he brings with him a lot of moral capital that could address their complex policing issues in Kingston, and some of them are of Kingston Police Department's own making, right? I can think of, you know, a couple of incidents that are high profile, and it's unfortunate that they've become conflated with urgent as you've taken have a greater awareness of tactics and not going overboard. You've got a new sheriff, and we've got a new DA coming in, and I suspect this new DA, who has a great reputation in Kingston, along with Juan, could really make a difference. I'm assuming the DA, I know who's going to win, maybe I don't, you know, but that could make a real difference in terms of convincing Kingston to cut it out, because I think there's an intersection of Kingston's own internal issues with urgent, and that's an unfortunate conflation. It doesn't have to be that way, and it could be navigated.
Well, you're going down and talk to the mayor tomorrow.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'll have to bring my lawyer.
I would like to just step back one second, because I'm still struggling. We kind of started to touch on it, but I still don't have in my mind, and I have an organizational development background, so for me, organizational design, accountability, chain of command, as you call it, the hierarchy of an organization, is really critical to success. And I'm still struggling with the operational end and the administration end, and why they're separated and not under leadership of one. And I'm still trying to get at why is it sitting in the DA's office versus the sheriff's office. And so I'm going to keep asking some questions of you guys to try and help me understand the roles and responsibilities of each of you and where it's creating challenges to being more effective in the urgent realm. That's a good way of
any task force, you're always going to have those dynamics.
Uh-huh.
We've got type A personalities.
No,
the way it's
running
it. Now is that the DA, the sheriff, and a rotating chief is on a executive committee. Bill Weissup is the commander of the detail, along with Detective Sergeant Brock, who reports to him. And he's got about the... it's the captain, because we just added the captain, the detective lieutenant, and then the detective sergeant. And mainly because the majority of the folks are my folks. And but we work, it's working. But if you're going to ask in the future who should run it, of course I'm going to say the majority of the people are mine. But the bottom line here, we all want the bad guys that are committing crimes to get arrested. And we'll work those details out. I think when the new administration comes in with the DA's office, we'll sit and reconvene. We'll bring the mayor and the chief in, and we'll reconvene. We'll listen and look at the Benjamin report, because I thought it was a great report, and we're going to look at that, and then we're going to figure out how we're going to move forward. But right now, we are in a holding pattern because of the season that we're in.
All right. Are there any other questions around the table? So, if I may, what I'd like to ask for help with is really having you guys, I know that there's three headcount in your budget that are shown for urgent, yet I know you have at least two or three other individuals who are full-time earmarked for that. So we don't even have a line item budget that is reflective of really the resources and expenses attached to urgent. And so I would really like for you guys to look at where the other resources are sitting within your budget and really try to come up with a budget that says, you know, here's what it is. And if we were going to, how many towns do you have today that have MOUs? Actually, you don't have MOUs for this year, is that correct?
We just submitted the paperwork for the resolution. It should be in the next
package for November. Okay,
it should be.
It's been late. Yeah, because you've been operating without an MOU. It ended last December, correct? Okay. So how many towns do you have currently?
Plattekill, Shandaken, Ellenville, New Paltz.
Okay. Okay. And if you were to, if we were to restructure this in a way that would fund portions of these other communities, is that some way you think throughout the year you may be able to reel other folks in and be able to give us something that says, bless you. This is what we think the cost would be. And by the way, here are some of the things we're going to start putting in place with regards to measuring our contribution, what's happening, not seizures, forfeitures, because I think those have a negative motivation. That's the wrong motivation. It's about getting the bad guys off the street. And if those things come to us as a result of it, that's able to be applied to your bottom line. But I think it's really important for us to have a budget that resembles what you're trying to accomplish and some key indicators of how you're going to measure your success. Because I think that's where we're all moving. That's where Pat has talked about it from a transparency perspective. That's where we've all been asking for KPIs for businesses. I mean, the fact of the matter is we need to understand what we're funding so we can support and follow through on that. So, you know, if you could help start to frame that out, we're in a cycle now. Go ahead.
I have a question, you know, because we're talking about UPRA and we're talking about sharing the cost of garbage across several different counties. Is that a situation that would apply here? You talked about having this one instance where you alerted authorities in New York, and New York got the arrest. And at least on this sheet that you gave us, there are at least two counties here that combine their task forces. Is that a way to cut costs and to share? Where would that? I mean, we're already having problems at the county level to bring everyone together.
It's where we're located at. It's difficult. It's where we're located. It's difficult.
Yeah.
The only other, and I didn't mean to interrupt the sheriff, sorry. The only other one other thing to bear in mind is when you talk about size of counties,
yeah.
You know, just simply geography. Mm-hmm. Certainly as you move south, some of the counties, you know, Rockland, they're smaller counties. And so, for example, if we were to merge, let's just say, for sake of argument, we were going to merge a Greene County.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now we've just increased from 1,200 square miles to however many more, and it's
not cost effective.
In that where we particularly sit as Ulster County with our particular geography, I don't think you would see any meaningful vis-a-vis where we know the routes of travel of, you know, the drug trails are. I don't think you would see any real articulable benefit.
Okay. And there's a lot of we've had a couple cases where not every county is we're actually pretty open here. Especially open to mergers and working with other people, much so than what I've seen in most of my career. We've had a couple cases here where the intel for motorcycle gang, narcotics, guns, lapped over into Orange County, just because of the border issue down in Walk Hill and some of the motorcycle gangs that were operating down in that area and up here. And we brought in some of our people to sit down with Orange County. The task force there is run by the district attorney. We brought them in with the ADA that was responsible for the prosecution. And we basically said, the way this is starting to morph, it looks like it would probably be beneficial if we took our intel, because they didn't have much, took our intel compared with what you do know, because the sites are there, and brought in the federal government and tried to push everything together for a good solid hit. And their response was, no, if it's in Orange County, then we're going to take it in the DA's office and nobody else is coming in. It's hard to operate like that.
And it's two different federal districts.
And it's two different federal districts. But the federal districts, they seem to, the Northern District is very...
and why'd they do that? Why'd they do that?
That's just the way, there are mentalities like that. And okay. They have their task force, and their position was, we'll take it in our task force, and that's where it's going to stay.
Uh-huh.
And the reality of that was, is we did end up taking it federal, but it was an end around. It wasn't as easy. So there's just a lot of that, what they call it, personality or territory or politics, whatever you call it,
ego.
A lot of that is
dynamics.
Present.
People dynamics
are present in all these different counties. Dutchess is the same way.
Yeah.
They'll be willing to give us some information and they'll come over, but they're under no.
I think we've got to work with ourselves first.
I was just going to say, do we have enough here? And is it, I mean, can we legitimately look at each town and say we've had arrests and issues that we've identified in each of the communities in Ulster County?
Well, before, the last conversation I had with Jim Quigley and with Sinagra, Joe Sinagra, it was all about money. And if this group decided to fund the salary and overtime of an officer from those two communities, the last time I spoke with him, then we could get that done. That would be easy. Kingston, I think, remains a hurdle for me, and we've had great rapport with Boyd, but I haven't had talked to Danny in a long time about that.
It's all fiscal for him.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, you know, I don't want to misrepresent the situation, but my sense—I don't know about you, Juan. My sense is that if we could fund officers from these different towns, and they all know that they're benefiting, the town, everybody in the community is benefiting from the work that we're doing. But you know,
I agree.
It seems to me that if you could make that happen, I think we could make this more of a task force with more participants.
You're talking about salaries.
The city of Kingston.
Yeah. It's a whole substantial. That's what I mean. But that, you know, the fact is, if you want to fund this thing, that's how. If I had come to you 10 years ago, or I wasn't around 13 years ago, but if I had been, I said, no, you know, you really need to fund this. This is
well. And the hard part here is that whether they give you the resource or not, if there's some issues going on in those towns, this task force will address it.
You're absolutely correct. So at some way, we've got to figure out what
the hook is to bring everybody in, because guess what? It benefits everyone.
You're absolutely right. We're not going to say, oh, no, you're not part of the task force.
Yeah.
We're not going to go there. No, you're absolutely correct. But that's something that may be taken advantage of.
Go ahead. One of the sort of comments made in the report was that was alluded to that the task force goes after small fish, not big fish. Is that a fair characterization or no?
So I don't think that's always, since I've been here, I don't think that's the case necessarily. But sometimes you do have to start small to get big. I mean, that's how it works. I mean, nobody just wants to go with the little guy. I mean, we want to go after the source. And I think we could do better. I think there are barriers the minute we start leaving the county. I come from a state agency. I'd go as far as Boston, Philadelphia, to find the source.
Yeah.
You know, again, it comes back to money and overtime. I mean, how much are you, you know, how far are you going to go to get the source? You can get the middle guy, but the source is still there. And the source is going to find somebody else to send them back up. So, of course, that's everybody wants to go after the source, but there are barriers to that.
Is that reflected in the seizures and your numbers in the seizures?
I'm sorry, can I just say one? I'll get to,
so big fish, small fish, and the numbers go down, and so I'm just asking, is there a correlation between seizures and the dollar and the cash and what you're seizing? Is that attached to whether you're catching a big fish or a small fish?
I can answer that. It's no, because we have hit big fish where their money supply went back into re-upping another package from Mexico or whatever. And
so it's timing.
They ordered, it's really timing.
Yeah, I mean, you pick up a mule who's a nobody and he's got 60 grand in the trunk. Says, where'd that come from? I never saw that.
But, got it.
So
okay.
it's not necessarily
correlated. I didn't know if there was a correlation.
But more to your question about big fish, small fish, I would ask the question maybe a little bit more this way. Anybody can say, oh, you know Johnny Jones, he's a big fish. Don't you want to go after him? And my response to you would be, give me the name of somebody that can go buy a package from him, and then I will. It's not a question of identifying or even committing to going after the big fish. The issue is being able to do it. If somebody has, as I think Holly said, you can't just walk up to the guy and go, I'd like to buy a kilo of cocaine from you if that's okay. I have $35,000, but if you'd be willing to, it doesn't work like that. You'll get killed. So it's not a question of commitment or desire. That's not it. It's a question of getting to the point on the Plinko board where you can find the person that can either buy that person or introduce you so you can buy whatever the case may be. The only way to start at the beginning is at the beginning. Yeah. You have to start with the first person to work, and that's why it's a ladder. That's why it's a
chain. Some of the numbers in the year that you have on the report, where they're low and then they go back up, those are the years that you guys are up on wires. So you got to look at the whole operation and how it works.
Wires are an incredibly labor-intensive process. It will divert resources from other pending presumably smaller cases.
Go ahead.
So the big fish, little fish thing. Sounds like the Dr. Seuss book. So we're doing an investigation, and we make a buy from somebody. It doesn't go anywhere else. I mean, we have a couple buys to this person. We have a criminal sale, and we recognize that person is maybe an addict and not a big player. We don't give them a pass. We don't say, oh, it's okay. You know, that person is when we did the sweep that we did it, I don't know how many years ago, it had picked up 60 or 80 people, I don't know how many it was, and you know, we were going after the gang. We got like 20, 25 gang members, legitimate gang members. It was a fabulously successful sweep. Yeah. The other people weren't gang members, but we didn't say, oh, it's okay. You know, if you sell heroin, you're going to get arrested. And so your statistics may show that, well, gee, you arrested a bunch of, you know, small fish or small players. Yeah, we did. If they sold us heroin, we arrest them.
They were caught in the net.
Yeah, right? I mean, you don't say it's okay. And so...
One last thing.
I just wanted to say that the goal is always to move on. But, you know, so those stats are maybe misleading.
One last thing on that. You have to remember, there is a direct correlation between the level of dealer that you move up on that ladder and the dangerousness of the next person on that chain. And not uncommonly, you might get second or third order effect where you go, okay, dealer to next dealer to next dealer. But somewhere in that chain, you're going to get to a point where that person knows that the person they're buying from is a seriously legitimate, like, they will get killed. So they would rather go to prison for however long, then turn in that person, and sometimes that's a real concern. That's a real thing.
It's a concern of ours too. Do you get it? I mean, it's not just the concern of the individual. It's a concern of ours. I mean, you say, I'm not going to put that person.
I'm not going to send that person in
because it's just not worth it. So you know, it's.
And going back to your question about a regional task force, there was one. It was called the Mid-Hudson Regional Task Force, and they never came up here. We sent people down there. They never came up.
Uh-huh. Heard all day, every day.
Yep.
Rich, you had something?
This is to the sheriff and the DA. We're not privy to your negotiations with the county exec regarding your budget, but when you went in to talk about your budget this year, did you actually ask for an increase in their urgent program in both your budgets?
Me? I didn't ask for an increase in urgent. I asked for some things that I didn't get them, surprisingly enough. But anyway, not specifically on urgent.
I did ask for an increase, but personnel-wise. Why? Because it's a team that we're going to put together that's going to be, the members going to be working out of urgent, but it's going to be more of a part of that second phase of my program where they go out. If somebody gets an overdose within 72 hours, the member will go out and talk to this individual, try and get them out, try to get the family out. Because you don't want to make it all one-sided when it comes to task forces anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a new world. And so this member is going to be giving us intel by telling us where all the stuff, all the overdoses are happening, but his role is going to be trying to get the individual help and into the system before he ends up at the county jail.
They did get funded.
Yeah.
Those are the two head count, isn't it? The
right,
two.
That's
two. Yeah.
That's two people.
Yeah.
One for urgent, one to offset the 5,000 additional calls we get a year for a road deputy.
Mm-hmm.
Just a point, we have data in there about how many hours every town provided because the distribution of resources based upon forfeitures was based on those hours. So calculating the portion of those hours that's overtime for a year and using a normalized number, speak English, just using some kind of average, we can get a rough number on what it costs to pay overtime for a year. And you could be in within those parameters. It might be within 20% of this number above or below, or 10% you could get parameters. Regarding salaries, I have to disagree with the DA in the first instance. I think that although he's a very smart guy, he had a judgment problem of being a friend of mine. The buy-in has to be, we know you're nervous, we're going to help. We're going to start to help with the cost, and this makes a difference to you. That's my idea, and it makes a difference to you not because the arrest occurs in Shandaken, but because an arrest in Kingston helps Shandaken, an arrest in Ellenville helps, an arrest in Highland helps Marlborough. You know, you have a. If you insist on the arrest being in your town, it's like forgetting about there's two oceans between the United States and these other parts of the world that are more contentious. We always wanted to fight our wars off the mainland, not have them come to our mainland. So if you are helping fight a war, metaphorically, in an adjacent community, you're helping yourself. That's the sell. And the carrot is, we're going to see if this works. We're going to show you it works. You give us the person for the part-time. Then we'll come back and have a conversation, and we may be able to convince a third party to help us, or the county to help us further. That's what I think might work better. And the numbers are more manageable. I mean, they're not.
That's
New
a
Paltz
good
told
point.
Me that he,
yeah.
When I talked to Supervisor New Paltz, he told me that every cop he has to calculate costs him $100,000 a year with benefits. You know, it could be a lot more or less. So when he has to turn to the community and say, we're sending $100,000 worth of police officer into this program, and we're afraid of walking down Main Street at night when the bars are all full on Friday night. You know, it's a tough conversation, even though they know that they don't want their kids.
But that's where having some stats, too, it helps support and makes that argument. And I think that's the stuff that I think you guys know best, how you can capture it and tell your story.
Yeah, we could definitely do better on grants. We had zero grant writers at the sheriff's office, and I'm working on changing that now.
I guess a quick question. So, even though we were talking about forfeitures, that not being a great way to fund the program, there was one portion of the report that talked about one of the judges who has kind of put down a blanket rule that when you're trying to negotiate a plea deal, forfeitures are off the table. Would if that bright line rule were removed and you could talk about forfeitures as part of the plea deal, would it increase the amount of money we get in terms of forfeitures?
Dramatically.
That has significantly, a
yes.
little bit significantly. So with a new judge coming in, we could see an increase in the, again, not that that should be the source of the funding, but it seems to me that that was problematic. And if that's off the table, we might see a little more flow. Of course, there are procedural concerns about forfeiture. We saw a Supreme Court case. I don't mean to sweep any of that under the table.
Well, and some of the state laws, some of the reforms are affecting forfeiture. So I don't know if that has
not
a...
Not the way we do.
Okay.
Honestly,
okay.
I don't think they will. The other thing is that a couple of attorney generals ago, they said, we're not going to do any federal forfeitures for a little while. And that kind of put things... You notice the numbers all for 2 years
dropped.
They just went
right.
south. And that's because the... We were taking these federally. They were easier to do that. The change in the judiciary should be a positive.
But Tracy's positive. Right. I mean, there's been a lot of corruption around this stuff, a lot of corruption concern, not here, but government working to pay for government by penalizing people doesn't sell, even if those are bad people.
Right.
And it's not a way of paying for... It's not a way of paying for an essential service. It's a way of supplementing the commitment to making the cost manageable. But the degree it turns into that, the negative incentives are perceived in the community, whether or not they're there, and that's a big one.
When I talked to Jerry about this, I said, look, let me be clear. The reason that I seize money is so that the drug dealer doesn't keep the money. That's the only reason. I don't care where it goes. I don't care if you take it out and burn it. But the goal for me is to say this is not profitable. And that's why I've been 100% behind this. The other option is to give it back. You know, you've got a guy who just made whatever amount of money selling poison to people, and he gets whatever he gets, and then you give him his money back. I said, whoa, I can't do that. So so really, the use of the money wasn't as important to me as the clear, just thing to do is to not let a person profit overselling heroin. That's all.
The reason that they're doing it is to make money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really why they're doing it.
Yeah. So.
And so if you want to hurt a drug dealer or stop future drug dealers from dealing, you have to do this. This is a tool that law enforcement uses. And you guys heard me say it when I came and me and the DA spoke to the folks in reference to federal asset forfeitures at the beginning of the year. You know, there's so many ways that the money can be made, and the poison that destroys families in this community, you know, it should go back to them. Uh-huh. It should not, and it should offset the cost of the taxpayer.
Okay. Any other questions? Do you have any questions?
No,
maybe?
I just only have.
Yeah. That's good for you.
But nonetheless, I really appreciate all of the information and time and energy that's been put into this. I really didn't see this coming down the line, to be honest with you. I am on the law enforcement committee, but I was not really aware of this.
The report.
Yeah.
The report itself, right.
Yeah,
because
it came out of ways and means.
Right.
But
right.
It's been very informative, and I appreciate everybody coming together to have this great
conversation.
Yeah,
we all do. This has been very helpful.
I would have liked to have had some really great questions.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you
great.
Can call me.
Anybody else?
I appreciate that.
Thank you for coming out tonight.
Yes, thank you.
Very appreciative.
So Paul, make a motion. To adjourn.
I'm glad I'm still alive.
Second? All right. All in favor? All right. Thank you, everyone.
I appreciate the time.